Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, good Saturday morning, my friends. Welcome to Off the Shelf for this Saturday, November the 6th. You guys remember to set your clocks back by 2 a.m. Sunday morning. Most people set them back before, when they go to bed on tonight, so they already had a clock set back because daylight savings time ends November the 7th at 2 a.m. in the morning, at 2 a.m., which of course is in the morning. So just a general reminder for you, and I'm sure you all will remember. Again, welcome to Off the Shelf for November the 6th, and thank you for joining us. As always, it's such a joy to have you with us. I'm waiting for our guest. I did connect with her earlier this week to dial in. But for those who are tuning in for the first time, I'll introduce myself. I'm your host, Denise Turney, coming to you live from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And again, I am so grateful that you're here with us. And I encourage you not to let another day pass before you pick up a copy of Long Walk Up. Long Walk Up is just a powerfully moving and inspirational book that you will really love to add to your book collection. You'll be inspired and encouraged and motivated as you read Long Walk Up, a young girl's story from tragedy to triumph. And you can get a copy of Long Walk Up today by calling www.chistell.com. You can also pick up a copy of Long Walk Up at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Borders, Walmart, et cetera. And if you don't see it on the bookstore shelves, just ask the clerk at the bookstore for it and tell them you want to order a copy of Long Walk Up by Denise Turney, and they can order a copy for you because Long Walk Up is carried by the largest book distributors in the world. And I am waiting for our guest to dial in. Let me shoot her a quick message. I did talk to her earlier this week, and she said she was a go, and I definitely want to introduce you guys to her. One thing I'm finding out sometimes with guests, they dial in late. You tell them to dial in a couple of minutes early, and I don't know why. I don't know why, but I know as a host myself, I tell myself not to do that. But different things come up in people's lives, and I also keep that in mind. I'm trying to get my email where I sent her to, so she can dial in. I'll have to just keep moving along. Got to do what I always do, keep it rolling. I'm not sure where she is. I do know she knows to be on today's show. Last week I went into talking about Long Walk Up because the last week guest didn't dial in either, and I think that was because the publicist didn't let the author know. But this author is aware about today's show, and I'm just waiting for her to dial in. Something could have come up. Things come up. People get caught in traffic, or all types of things come up in life, and I don't like to blame people or anything like that. I don't know what's going on, so I'm just waiting for her to dial in. And as soon as she dials in, I'm going to connect her to the show, and I'm gonna see if I can get her email address. And I apologize to you guys for this. Get her email address so I can let's see. Give her a nudge. Tell her to remember, dial in. Waiting on her website to come up. This is life, my friends. You never know what the next 5 minutes is going to bring. Here she goes. This is not going to work. What can I talk about while I'm sitting here trying to, as I talk to you, I'm on the phone with you, I'm actually trying to type in her email address while I'm on the phone, so I got to do a couple of things at one time. But, again, this is life. Let's see. Just typing in her email address. now. We've already started. Okay. Hopefully she'll be tuning in. Hang on, this might be her now. Hello, is this Barbara?
Yes, it is.
Oh, my goodness, Barbara, I just shot you an email. We've been on for 6 minutes. Last week, the other author didn't dial in, so I just spent an hour talking about my latest book, and just now I'm like, okay, do I have to do this again?
No. Are you getting a good connection?
Yeah, I'm hearing you okay.
Okay. Well, Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just saying my house is up in this really mountainous kind of area, and sometimes I don't get a good line.
I was telling our guests I don't know what's going on because I have had times when our listeners, when guests on the show have dialed in a few minutes. One lady, her tire blew on her, and
mm-hmm.
sometimes if I'm dealing with a publicist, maybe the publicist doesn't let the author remind the author about the interview, and then they don't dial in, which is what I think happened last week. But different things happen, as I tell our listeners. I had just shot you another email, so you can disregard it, but different things happen. But you are here now, and we are connected. So we
Absolutely.
Are going to move. We are going to move on. You got to keep rolling. I tell people with life, whatever comes up, you better be ready to roll. What they say, you have to be like water. You just have to go with the flow. So I want to introduce you to our listeners here at Off the Shelf. This is the moment we have all been waiting for to meet our special guest for today. And today's Off the Shelf feature guest is a psychologist. She is a blogger and she has a wonderful sense of humor, and she is a book writer. She is the author of the books Too Rich and Too Thin, Not an Autobiography, her latest, and The Special Educator, Stress and Survival. She is also a lover of horses, and when I read that about I felt a connection because I also love horses. And she is online at HTTP with the forward slashes, mysteryshrink.com. So just remember Mystery Shrink, spelled the way it sounds, mystery then SHRINK.com. Again, that's mysteryshrink.com. Or you could even type in the search engines, Too Rich and Too Thin, and then type her name in, and her website will come right up. So we are honored to have her with us this morning, and she is the one and only Barbara DeShong. Welcome to Off the Shelf, Barbara.
Well, thank you.
Your sense of humor comes through your blogs. Oh my goodness, the titles for your blogs and the humor in your blogs, it comes through so strong. I had to start with that. I'm like, wow, your personality just shines through your writing. I wanted to ask you, when did you start blogging, and what has that experience been like for you?
I'm like everybody else. I started once, and then I got overwhelmed, and I quit, and then I came back. I guess I came back strong about a year ago, and I really had a purpose. My purpose was trying to figure out a way. I like to write, but I do psychology, and trying to figure out a way to maybe do something that would actually be helpful to people. And
mm-hmm.
and my thought was that all of us get in messes, and all of us have our immaturities that get us in trouble. And so the idea was, I'm not a preachy person, and so I did
mm-hmm.
not want to write just an advice column or this is what you should do. And I thought it would be fun and more interesting to write from the perspective of, here's somebody that has studied this for decades, and still life is hard, but to do it
mm-hmm.
the humorous way, and so that people could perhaps learn something and have a good time at the same time.
And you do a great job at that. Your blogs are so honest. I encourage our listeners, you will enjoy reading her blogs. shrink.com. I'm telling you. Do any of your clients read your blogs? Because then they come back
oh, yeah.
and tell you that their perception about something shifted after they read
yes.
your blog.
And that's happened with when I traveled and done speaking engagements, too. Because everywhere I go, then people pick up on it. And then that's kind of what keeps me going, is people will say, I know exactly what you're talking about. That happened to me.
Wow.
And particularly
okay.
the idea of trying to be able to make a fool of yourself and still be moving forward and care about yourself and other people and have a good time.
Your blog, Let Your Emotions Be Your Guide in Vegas. Are you crazy? Humor and so much real-life advice. And you have a, like you said, you're not preachy, so you have a very gentle way of getting a message across. But I just wanted to read for our listeners here at Off the Shelf just some of Barbara's blog, if you don't mind, the one with the title, the trip to Las Vegas, when you talk about Let Your Emotions Be Your Guide. And it starts a setup. June, the Las Vegas Hilton, Las Vegas, Nevada, Branch World Headquarters, several years ago. First note, June, 118 degrees midday. I was booked into the Hilton Resort to haunt the buffet and catch up on a bit of editing. Why, you ask? Would a person of sound mind spend a week in Vegas in June? Reread the previous sentence, and you had an answer. I am the all-season practicality free queen of luxurious vacations. Cost per night, $49. Now, if you're thinking you have a break in your June schedule, read the following before you click on to Vegas.com. And then you go on. She goes on for the to our off-the-shelf listeners and tells you a little bit more about her trip to Vegas. Particularly, I think it was you were going to copy something,
right.
Just your humor comes through. And I wanted to ask you, having that type of humor is just a gift, a treasure. Have you always had this type of wit about you, or is it something that you just decided as life went on you were going to acquire that sense of humor?
No, my whole family's like that.
Yeah.
Is that People will ask me a lot. They'll say, "Well, do you get your characters from your psychology practice?" And I always say, "No way. I have plenty in my family," and it's true. They're all hilarious and out of the out of your mind. When we get together, the joke always is having you run out of the room so you don't wet your pants because you're laughing so hard.
Oh my goodness, that's a blessing, because life, like you said, it comes with its. It can give you some pretty hard blows, so to be able to laugh is really, really a blessing and a gift. Which profession did you take up first? And I have a presumption about this, but I could be wrong. Was it writing or psychology? And how have the two blended and complemented each other?
Well, since my mother died in high school and she was a third grade teacher, that was what I was going to do at first. For one semester, I did that. And then I was going to be a veterinarian. And I went through the pre-med program preparing to be a veterinarian. And then I met my husband who was teaching psychology, and I know it's not very cool, but then I started studying psychology. But about the book and the writing, my mother, who was a writer, she was a travel writer in Mexico and several other places where she wrote a column that sort of specialized in what is it like to travel with three small wild children. Anyway, so she was a writer, and she really wanted me to write, but I was horse crazy. And spent for probably 40 years, I rode horses at least 5 times a week, 3 hours a day, and was gone. Yeah, I was gone maybe 20 weekends a year showing horses. Every bit of money and energy went into doing that, and I thought it was my total love. Then when I had to quit that, it finally made enough sense for me to do that and started writing. The thing that was so funny was I enjoyed it so tremendously, and it was one of those situations where your mother was right. I wish I had done it from the whole time through because it was so much fun and so fulfilling and so much dangerous and expensive.
Yeah.
And I love to do it. I write.
Oh, do you still ride?
No, I ride now. No, I came up with an inflammatory disease so that I could go ride today, but I would pay for it for a month, so I don't anymore. But I don't miss it. That's what's weird.
Oh, okay.
Because I love
riding. Maybe you did it for as long as, you was, I don't know, that you wanted to do it and you but still, you love horses, so that's you can you can still be around them and still,
right.
And go, my God, 3 hours a day riding a horse.
Well,
I've only ridden Oh, I mean, I might have ridden a horse twice. You don't know how tall those animals are till you go to get off.
That one, unless you fly off it. And I was riding jumper, so it's really taking a lot of your time.
Wow.
Oh my goodness. Think I don't do anything in a small way. And I'm the same way with riding. You know, once
okay,
I
you go all out. You pull. You. Okay. Was there? So your mother was a writer, and that's what got you into writing. Because I asked our guest here on Off the Shelf if there was is there a specific event that happened that caused you to know that you were the writer. And most people, a lot of people, is in their childhood something happened. Some not until they're an adult. But there's usually another person that they'll mention.
Oh, yeah, and I wrote my first detective story, you know, about when I was about 10 or 11, driving around through Mexico in the back of a station wagon. So, because my mother was riding a truck.
Okay.
And the blog's perfect because it's a short, when I'm working on a novel, it's fun to sit down and do something short.
Before we get into your book, Too Rich and Too Thin, I want to discuss something that you mentioned in another one of your blogs that's titled Fillings. Get hungry enough and dog droppings look like a donut. This blog, you mentioned something I've heard about. Sometimes I listen to Hay House Radio, and I got a book or audio tape, Ask and It Is Given, is by this, I don't know if you ever heard of it. It said it's this angel consciousness, and it calls Abraham. And they mentioned the emotional guidance system. So when I saw that, it jumped out at me. And again, it's in a book titled The Art. And now they have a book called The Art of Allowing. And this book does state that, as a psychologist, you would know this, we have emotions buried beneath an emotion that we're feeling. So you might be feeling what could be angry, but underneath that is fear. So a lot we might not be aware that what is the emotion, the root emotion, what's really lying up under what we're feeling. We don't often
that.
Sometimes
it's
dreams.
Really,
you know.
Yeah, really tricky part. I'm doing a book right now, and it's the same character, but she's doing a workshop on love addiction, and that's one of the places where you really, really see it, where somebody is desperate to fall in love, and they think they're in love when they are fearful of being on their own or some tragedy has just happened in their life. It's not the emotion that they're feeling. It's just a great desire for this other person. It'll happen, say, somebody's mother dies or someone else important does, and then you fall in love with the next person you meet. But you think this is the most wonderful person I ever met, when the truth of the matter is it may be dog droppings.
Yeah, because you're really looking for your mother or your father, the person who has gone on. That attachment, if it's strong or if it wasn't there and you're still seeking it in other people, goodness, you can see why we go around and around in circles and one after the next, and we don't know why this is never working. That's
absolutely
one tricky thing about humans. One tricky thing about humans is, we have so many levels to us, and we're really generally only aware of what the consciously going on. But there's so much going on in us at all times we're not even aware of. And sometimes I wonder, why did the good Lord make us like that? Aware of what's going on, and we don't get sideswiped so much. But go ahead.
I was just going to say it. Fear is another big one. I think from the time we're children, we learn to say, I don't like something, and we believe we don't like something when it's really fear. We don't think we can do it, I call it the junior high dance syndrome, where you're terrified to go to the junior high dance, which is an intelligent thing to be, but you're terrified to do it, and so what you decide is you don't like dancing. And that may go on for years and years before you realize, no, I don't not like dancing, I was scared.
Yes. Yeah, and it takes a lot of work, I think. You got to really be honest with yourself to see what is really going on. So I just wanted to ask, because I hear more people talking about this emotional guidance this emotional guidance system, and I like how you address it in your and then you actually talk about this guy who goes, he dumps these women off in your office when he's ready to dump them. I guess he wants to lay them down gently. So let's go to the therapist for some
right.
counseling. And really, what I'm getting ready to do is I'm getting ready to leave you, and I don't want to do it a hard way. So that's why we're in the therapist's office. I want to let you go easily. So and you talk about then the cycle starts again.
Exactly.
And you end up doing the same thing again and again and again. What are your thoughts about that? Have you ever heard about the art of allowing that?
No, but
that
it really
Abraham,
sounds interesting. Go ahead.
So when did you hear about the emotional guidance system? I've heard that you can trust your emotional guidance system. If something doesn't feel right, then don't do it. If it does
yeah.
feel right, then do it. It's like this system has no flaws, but I'm not sure that's accurate. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, my thoughts are that penitentiaries are full of people who went with their feelings.
Wow.
You know, that's, yeah. our feelings, they are below the surface, and they lie. They lie, and they get us often in, they'll override our thinking system. I love true crime TV, and I love it because it's got all sorts of stories and people are stranger than fiction. But one of the things that happens when you watch a lot of that is you see people over and over going with their gut. And
yeah.
they don't even have a life anymore. You know, like a 17-year-old kid who says, well, you know, these other guys are going to go rob this liquor store, and all I'm going to do is go along. And that couldn't be too bad. What a big lie that
mm-hmm.
is. You have to lie.
Yeah.
So much reality. And love relationships where people ignore tremendous amounts of reality, myself included when I was 19, and just go for it. And
yeah.
just turn your face to... and it's true in every addiction. Addiction and all the compulsions are only possible because we decide to go with our feelings instead of what
yes.
we know to be true.
Yes. Yes.
And the
so
whole
you
thing
gotta,
about the whole thing about the emotions aren't bad.
Right.
Emotions are wonderful, and we feel great. And there are other times that we can say, "I'm going to go with when I go to a football game. My emotions and my feeling system is right out there, and it's a great deal of fun." But I know my thinking system has told me that my jumping up and down and screaming at a ref that's 200 yards away really is not going to have any long-term effect on my life. But if I get really mad at my brother-in-law and do the same thing, well, it is going to have a long-term. That's
right.
one of the big mistakes about going with your feelings. The whole element of addiction therapy for so long, and it's still true in some places, would conclude that the addict, their problem was they had these deep hidden emotions that they needed to go splatter over everybody in their family. And
mm-hmm.
it doesn't help.
No.
But what feelings do,
yeah.
when you act on your feelings like that, there's a small window of time when you feel good. Oh, I showed
yeah.
them. But
mm-hmm.
it's not very long before the fruit, you know, what you planted starts coming back.
Yeah. But I will say this before we start talking about too rich and too thin. I do believe, and I've had times where I felt like this is something. If I look at everything on paper, a situation might look right. I'll say move into a different city. But something in my gut just feels like, don't do that. I've had times when I went against my gut, and I paid a big price for it. And I've
That's
had times
exactly.
when I go. And I've
but
had times when
yeah.
so I think. There is
well,
something there.
Oh yeah, it's not. People think that that's not the case. It's that adding that little piece of long, like when you're looking at that and you can feel something funny, you're actually engaging your brain and you're actually saying using your thinking system by saying, this doesn't all add up and I can't ignore it. And a lot of times
yeah.
that's the thinking system that is able to stop it. Unlike, like I say, people who end up in jail who get to that same place, this doesn't feel right, but oh well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I got you.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're not. They're overriding their
exactly.
own common sense. Yeah. You can't just go on feelings alone. You gotta be smart. Now I want to talk about too rich and too thin. Can you tell our off the shelf listeners what Too Rich and Too Thin is about?
It's about primarily about a woman who grew up in the lower part of the community and who through, this is not the protagonist, this is the woman who's dead from the beginning, who wanted so badly to have a place in society. When she got some money and some fame, she set about to retrain her family to be, to look better on the front of People magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And that would including feeding her daughter drugs to make her lose weight. And then eventually the main, this woman was so controlled by her appearances that she had her bedroom walled in distortion mirrors so that she would always look thin and young in her own home. Now that's weird.
I can just see you were
sick. Yes. Wow. That
but
is
it's really
you know anybody who's done, of anybody, do you know of anyone who has done that?
Well,
or you just made
that
up in
there? Well, I made that up, but I have seen and worked with many clients in this age of plastic surgery where the desire to be younger and slimmer occupies most of their money and most of their time.
Wow.
So it kind of came from that. And
oh my goodness, this and your and with your sense of humor for our off-the-shelf listeners, if you just go over to mysteryshrink.com, you'll see what I'm talking about when I say Barbara DeShong has a wonderful sense of humor. Just what you've just described about the book, I know there's something else that happens in the story because it's also somewhat of a mystery. This is a very entertaining story. I mean, you start off telling at the very beginning and even in the excerpt at mysteryshrink.com, you give readers a clue. There's something that happens in this woman's life beyond her obsession with her, you know, her appearance. There's something that happens, and she gets herself in a, from the beginning, she's in a bit of a muddy situation that she's got to figure her way out of. And I wanted to ask you next, with your sense of humor, and I'm not saying that you should have written strictly a comedy, but I think this adds to the story. From the very beginning, you get right to the story. It's obvious that there's something going on that needs to be resolved from the beginning. It's fairly a significant thing for our off-the-shelf listeners. Why did you decide to go with a mystery, and do you think you'll be writing more mysteries in the future?
I think so. I like mysteries. I like mysteries that are kind of capers, too, you know, where they have kind of crazy characters and kind of go wild.
Okay.
But when I decided to write a mystery, I like true crime. I worked in the State Hospital Criminal Insane Unit when I first got out of graduate school, and it was
ooh, God bless you.
Well, it was so fascinating to meet people and work with people that were so very different inside that on the outside you never know, and yet the capacity to kill, particularly family members, was in there. And yet these guys, we would sit down and have lunch. It was just, I got kind of fascinated from the beginning about human beings and what they will do to get what they want and the danger, the absolute danger of charming human beings that will do anything to get what they want. It was kind of tough on the humor part because it opens with the protagonist's husband has been murdered.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard to say, okay, she's going to be trying to resolve this, what happened to her husband, and I want to make it funny, and she just lost her husband, which isn't very funny.
Yeah.
Since that happened,
not to interrupt you, Barbara, I wanted to ask you, are both the husband, David, and the wife in the book, are they both psychologists or psychiatrists? Are both of them?
Yes.
Or just,
yes.
Okay.
Which mirrors
okay.
my life. It's also true in my life.
My husband's
a psychologist, too, so that part was in there.
Okay. Okay. And I wanted to ask you next, did you, and I want to get back to Too Rich and Too Thin you know, in the interview as well. But did you receive formal training as a writer? I know you said you started writing when you were about 10 years old and your mother was a writer. And the reason I ask you that is because, as I mentioned earlier in the interview, you get to the story right away. Sometimes new writers, and I did this when I first started, you spend a lot of time creating backstory, and you don't do that. You get right to the heart of the story. You let the reader know right away, like you say, that the wife's husband has been murdered. Now the reader's right away wondering, okay, now what now? What is going to happen? And then another thing that you kind of pulled a reader in with in this interview, you mentioned the woman's obsession with her appearance. So we now know there's something maybe a little quirky about her that will also keep the reader turning the pages. That said, as soon as I read the excerpt, I'm like, she is really good. Did you receive any formal training? Did you take a creative writing course? A lot of people get a master's in creative writing, or is this something that just came to you naturally?
Oh, no, it was a great deal of torture. When I decided, and I speak sometimes at writing conferences to other people who are already have a career and are thinking about doing it, what happened was, since I went through undergraduate school, so I went through pre-med, planning on going to veterinary school. In fact, I actually even went and did my a couple of classes in vet school before I decided to quit. Because of that, I never took a single English class the entire time I was in school. Because you could take a pass-out test at the beginning, which I did, and I never took another thing. So when I decided to write, and I had written a successful nonfiction, which is very easy to write, actually, nonfiction. And I wanted to write fiction. I had no idea. And what was pathetic is I had no idea. I had no idea. So I put together my first, it was horrible. I have a brother-in-law who's an English professor. And we met for breakfast, and I gave him this stack. It must have been over 200,000 words of just hideous stream of consciousness horror. And because I did not know that then. I did not know that. I thought he was handing him this beautiful baby. And he's just wonderful because he actually read every word.
Wow.
But when he gave me my feedback, he wrote it out, and this is how it started. First sister-in-law of mine that I love dearly. Now you know you're in trouble. Then he said, I want to first say how much I admire your discipline and determination. This is going to be bad. It won't.
Oh.
And he finished up by saying, I suggest you take a semester and take some writing classes. And, when I recovered, I did just that. I started going to writing conferences. And I learned by reading a lot. So I'll go by 6 books on writing, and I just poured over them and learned because, and that's not Too Rich and Too Thin. This is one that I have to go back to someday because it was a good plot, but it's just going to have to have a pretty strong day to go back and read it again. It's horrible.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. Do you work with an editor to help you, like, get your, make sure the story is... Okay, because I as a writer, there are times when I first started, I thought, well, I can self-edit because I had read some books about self-editing, and I've been writing a long time. But it is, I think, impossible to catch everything, just like when a person goes to a psychologist if they're going through struggling with something. If you think you're catching everything, you think you're noticing everything, wow. There's so much that's slipping by you.
Well, yeah. I just have another manuscript now that just went to an editor. I just got it back. And, I mean, if you don't like criticism, don't write. Because this one was just slashed to pieces, too. But it's so helpful. So helpful. It's like when people come to see me in my office and they will. I said, now we're going to talk a lot here about some things that you may need to change in your life, but hold on, because you don't go see a psychologist so that I can say, well, you have a great relationship with your sister. Or it's like going to an orthopedist when you're hurting and they don't look at the bones that are not injured, and that's doing your job. So it's
right.
I just personally love to write. I think it's fun as heck. And if nothing ever got published, I would never turn back and say, while I was sitting there in Mexico City working on putting these characters together, laughing out of my mind to myself, that's life. You know, whatever happens, happens.
Right.
The fun of that is just amazing.
And there's a payoff in that. And I wonder, and that comes through in your writing, by the way. I wanted to ask you, where is Too Rich and Too Thin set? And why did you pick the setting? What's the town? What type of environment are these characters in?
Well, the main setting is this is Austin, Texas, where I live. Then there are other parts that take place in Mesilla, New Mexico, which is just a wonderful place just across the border near Las Cruces, New Mexico. Then northern Mexico and south Texas. And I picked all those because that's where I grew up. And I still I spent a lot of time in Mexico and find that history of those parts of the United States are just my loves. And, of course, now it's my horror because of what's going on down there. But the church here has some orphanages in Nuevo Laredo, and they have some projects where we just go out in the boondocks and provide food. So, and I grew up with that. And so that whole culture is, in the, particularly the history, the early history of Mexico and the Southwest United States, just interests me. So I try to have history in everything that I write. So you get a little chunk, like in that one, you get a little chunk of Billy the Kid and a little chunk of the Alamo.
Okay. Are these upscale? That was my first impression. Are these like very wealthy? This couple is very wealthy. They're an upscale couple. Is this? That was my impression when I first read the book, that these people are very wealthy. They're upscale folks. They probably live in a gated community. Was I way off?
No, that's very interesting that you said that because, no, it's true. When this woman marries the man who's now dead, he has been in practice a long time. And she does not come for money at all, and neither does he. But they've put this life together. And one of the things that I have decided is that in the next thing I'm working on now, she's broke. And I like that because it makes more to the character to have a – because it also makes the character more like what I know autobiographically. And because I rode horses with all these people, but I worked side jobs the whole time, which I hid from everybody and didn't and used my lunch money and all those kinds of things, which I think actually added to my enjoyment.
Okay.
The fact that I worked hard for it.
Right. And then they had this money almost, and I don't know why that happened. Some people can pull that money in, which is something I wish I was able to do, but some people can pull in a massive amount of money into their life, and other people it's just enough to get you from day to day to day. Can you tell us about one or two conflicts and Too Rich and Too Thin that will keep the readers turning the pages? Already the wife with the obsession with her appearance and the fact that we've got to now figure out what has happened to her husband. That definitely will keep readers turning. But is there anything else? Does she have any conflicts with anyone in the story as far as relationships? Anything that goes on that will keep readers saying, wow, I got to find out what happened?
Well, the children of the woman who are dead are very interesting in their relationships. It's central to the going on. And the main character, her husband's actually been dead about a year, and she has some thought at first about picking up again with the chief of detectives in town who's also recently divorced. But she has this cowboy friend that she met in college, and he's this really far-out fellow who his family owns a lot of West Texas, and he's would be a terrible husband, or at least at that particular time. And he's kind of in the background. And he's also a person that has a great deal of power, because in Texas it's still very true. In certain sections in the South and the West, there are these very powerful families. And who gets elected, all that is still, it's still not different. I mean, it's, so he makes...
I think that's still around the whole country.
It could be. It could be that's the one I know. But it mm-hmm. seems, and in those areas, the population is sparse. So that I think people are more aware of it because it's there are
okay.
not very many people per mile in West Texas.
Okay.
I also
okay,
brought in
so
part of, about Geronimo because I've always thought it was really interesting that how the whole Native American reservation system was put into motion.
Mm.
And that's just one of the characters is related to Geronimo. And people don't,
oh, okay.
People don't realize we talk about Bin Laden and not being able to capture him, but that is not the first time that's happened in the United States. When Geronimo escaped to the mountains and when Pancho Villa escaped into the mountains of Mexico, the United States sent tens of thousands of troops and ran around the mountains for a few years, never got him.
Mm.
So I thought that's kind of an interesting parallel.
Yeah. Especially with what you just had mentioned with Bin Laden. But I guess you catch who you really want to catch because they called Saddam
yeah,
Hussein.
Yeah, but he was where they thought he was. You know.
Oh, okay.
That's the thing. When people are in their own native environment.
Right.
And that whole area of the Sierra Madres in Mexico is a different world.
Right.
And probably
when,
the most...
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say the biggest and most intense relationship in the book, which continues throughout what I'm writing now, is the main character's relationship with her best friend, George.
Okay. Ah, interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Her best friend is a guy.
Yeah.
And he was that was even when she was married to her husband David.
Yes.
Her and George were good friends then.
Yes. And of course, that was such a short period of time, but. And the character is, it did come from real life, and she meets this guy when she returns to Austin, and she's going back to school, but she also needs to get a divorce from her stepbrother. And this is the attorney that she went to get this divorce from, and they've just stuck together. Excuse me, I'm getting over a cold.
Okay. This is definitely, you got a lot going on in this story, and this is one reason why when I love to... hear from the guests as they talk about their books. When you ask them questions, they will uncover more and more things in the story that will pique a reader's interest. I want to talk briefly about another book that you wrote, The Special Educator, Stress and Survival. Is this, I assume it is, but I would just rather get the confirmation from you, is The Special Educator, Stress and Survival, is that a work of nonfiction?
Yes.
Okay.
And it was one I wrote when I first got out of school.
Oh, okay. I wanted to ask you next, how, Barbara, briefly, how does unhealthy stress, how is it triggered? Because I'm told stress is a natural part of life, and then I want to talk a little bit more about Too Rich and Too Thin again and ask you how our readers can get a copy. But first I wanted to ask you, how is unhealthy stress for off-the-shelf listeners who might be dealing with some stressful situations in their own personal lives, but how is unhealthy stress triggered? And do we learn anxiety coping skills when we're kids, and do we stick with those coping skills throughout our lives? Is that normally how it goes?
Well, and it's one of the things that's most interesting about stress, and the reason I wanted to write about it is when people first started talking about it 30 years ago, the researchers came up with a scale, a list of items or events that cause stress in people's lives. And then they studied a whole bunch of people and they put them in a ranking that, first of all, death of a spouse was the most, and then it went down to getting a new job and everything that we think of that might be in a car accident and being financially in trouble. Well, they put the scale out. And everybody used it for a decade or so. And then what happened was that there was so much variation. And what you would do, you would add up the numbers of all those that are in your life and see whether or not you were in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happened as the research continued is none of that was useful because who the stress happened to, was more important than what happened to them. That in fact, some people could lose a job, get depressed, and kill themselves. Somebody else, I'm sorry, but it's cold.
No, I've had coughs and colds, so you don't have to apologize for that at all.
So that being the case, then what was more important than trying to regulate what happened to people's lives was teaching skills and ways to manage stress. It's kind of like with the sexual harassment law. When it first came out, it was stated somewhat to the effect that sexual harassment had occurred if the victim felt humiliated or in danger.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was a huge mistake, because one of the things that happened is all the most anxious people in all the offices lined up.
Yeah.
Because
right. Yeah.
It didn't take much to get them to feel humiliated.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't that sexual harassment didn't exist, it just had been defined in a way. Hang on, let me get a cough drop.
Oh, go right ahead. While you getting a cough drop, because I don't want you to be concerned that you got to rush right back to the phone. While you getting a cough drop, I'm just going to let our listeners know that we, and I think Barbara just dropped off, so I'm going to wait for her to connect back. But she was coughing, and I've done that myself. I just wanted to recap for those of you who might just be joining Off the Shelf, and thank you for being here with us this morning, and she's back on. I wanted to recap for you're back. I wanted to recap for our listeners here who just tuning in, and again, thank you for joining us. That we are talking with the one and only Barbara Deshawn, and she is online at Mystery Shrink, and it's spelled just the way it sounds, Mystery, and then shrink.com. I encourage you so much to go over there, check out her blogs. If you don't laugh, I will be shocked. She has a wonderful sense of humor. And then you can go over there and check out her new book, her latest, Too Rich and Too Thin, not an autobiography. And then we're talking about a nonfiction book that she wrote when she got out of when she came out of school with her psychology, before she started her psychology practice. She is a psychologist, a blogger, and a book writer, and she also loves horses, and we're so honored to have her with us today again. And you can get her books at Amazon.com, and later in the show I'm going to ask her some other places where you, the off-the-shelf listener, can pick up a copy of her book. Again, Barbara Deshawn, the author of Too Rich, Too Thin, not an autobiography, and she's online at MysteryShrink.com. But what we were talking about was the how unhealthy stress is triggered, and Barbara was going into an example with how they came out with a chart of different things that were considered to be, you know, top stressor, like losing a spouse and then going down to losing a job. But they later found that it really had more to do with the person. Some people can handle stressful situations better than others, so it appears. And then she was using an example of the sexual harassment. So, Barbara, you were talking about the sexual harassment, you know, when they first...
When it first came out, they defined harassment as if the victim felt humiliated or frightened. But what happened is that the courts were filled with people whose sensitivity was so high that it didn't take anything at all for them to feel that way. Then they changed the law to read if a reasonable person would feel. And so it changed, it got to where it made sense, it leveled out. I'm so sorry.
No, I'm thanking you for hanging. I thank you for hanging in there, Barbara. I hope you got something to drink, like some tea or some water there with you. Okay.
But there's good news. Because the good news about all this is, we can't really change most of the events that happen to us. The only thing
right.
that we can really change is our person. And
right,
our spot.
How we react to it.
Right.
How we
That's
react
why,
to what happened.
Yeah, exactly. That the only way that we're not victim to all the bad things that happen is by recognizing how powerful we are and to make personal change and to deal with the things that come along without having those things define us.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of looking at our own ways of, the thing about the emotional system is it's very anxiety driven. And so managing our anxiety, for example, overeating, it's so anxiety. Nobody would say that you've engaged your thinking system when you ate 2 dozen donuts, but you're attempting to relieve anxiety.
Yes.
The human being is so weird. I mean, we don't learn anything. Because if we did, we eat the bag of donuts and we feel sick in our stomach and don't feel like going out. Yeah, we're going to do it again and again and again.
Exactly.
Because the short-term anxiety reduction.
I think the subconscious mind is very unintelligent. That's just me. I know a lot of people put a lot of trust in it. But that thing will have you doing the same dumb thing over and over and over.
Exactly.
And trying to convince you that if you just do it for the billionth time, it'll work.
Right. All right, exactly. That's exactly it. And I work with a lot of compulsive gamblers or people that have a lot of affairs, and they're doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a fantasy there where they ignoring of there's a statement in the thing I'm writing now where somebody's marrying somebody they've known 3 months, and she asks, well, what do you think? And my thought is, would you like to see the statistics on people who get married after knowing each other 3 months? Do you want the facts really, or do you want me to pretend that this makes a lot of sense?
Yeah.
And mostly people want you to pretend.
Yes.
And
I came here so you could help me support this.
Right. Exactly. If you don't, then I'll just go down and find somebody else.
Right.
And you can find some. People have a lot of misconceptions about psychology and the work you do in psychology because many people think that the client comes in, sits down, gosh, tells the psychologist all the bad people and what they're doing, and the psychologist validates their feelings, is what it's called.
Right.
Well, if the psychologist validates your feelings, give you no feedback in reality,
then
it's
no
worse
need
than
to
never going
there.
To therapy. Yeah, it's worse.
Yeah, there's no sense in
going. Not only do you think that your sister is impossible, but now this professional agrees with you.
Yeah.
So you're not turned at all to start saying, what am I going to do? What am I going to do in this relationship? How can I improve it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
Therapy
sometimes
is dangerous for marriage because if you have...
To tell you the truth.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you said that. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, if you come in to see a therapist and you tell all your horrors about your husband, and one of the things that we forget, we all exaggerate from our own point of view. You know, we give everybody the story from the way we saw it. We leave out all sorts of stuff.
Right.
And if that psychologist or therapist is not very skilled, their emotional system will want to make you feel good about yourself.
Yeah.
And you just have kind of a mutual admiration society that doesn't do anybody any good.
Right. Mm. Sometimes they say the people who upset you the most might actually help you a lot because they can help you open your eyes and see. Again, when you understand the subconscious mind, just from some own personal experiences I've had, I think it's very unintelligent because it wants to keep trying to do the same thing over and over, just out of stressor, and it just is convinced that if you do this just for the billionth time, it'll work.
Right.
And it's that is absolute insanity. So you have to.
That's why I tell people to come in my office. Yeah. You know, I will say, after a while of trying to explore things, and I will say, so what you're telling me is you want to keep doing what you're doing, and you just want to get different results.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that doesn't work. And some people, just because of the kind of work I do, the whole goal I tell people in my office is if you feel good and feel better about yourself, but your outside relationships don't improve, I haven't done my job.
Right.
You know, because that's where you live.
Right.
Not in the cozy therapist office. You live out there. And it's hard.
Right.
I mean, change is hard. while, like I write in my blog, it's really true. It's just as hard for me as it is for anybody else.
Right. Yeah, we all walking down this road, same road. Mm-hmm. So I thank you for what you've shared. I always believe that somebody tunes in and will get, we have so many faithful, loyal listeners here at Off the Shelf, and that it'll be just what they need. And maybe it'll just start to open their eyes a little bit so they can move forward. And change is tough, but if you want to have a better life, there's something we have to do. We only have, believe it or not, 4 minutes left. I wanted to ask you, in these last 4 minutes, can you tell our Off the Shelf listeners, who do readers tell you is their favorite character in Too Rich and Too Thin? Who they tell you, oh, my goodness, it's my favorite character?
George.
Oh, okay.
And George is actually more like my husband. And because I love buddy stuff. I love funny buddy movies where the dialogue is sharp and they love each other, but they get each other constantly in trouble. Maybe that's because I grew up with, you know, kids, family. But I love that kind of interaction. And that she, even though Jessica was married, he was really too nice a guy because he's in another book. But I love that kind of repartee and the kind of characters that kind of get in over their head following something seriously, but it's funny at the same time.
Okay.
And so he's my
favorite. That was, and you said that hands down, George, no doubt about it. Sometimes people will tell me, they kind of like, I'm not sure about that. Okay, so we have to get Too Rich and Too Thin so we can check out George. Will there be a sequel? Last 3 minutes, will there be a sequel to Too Rich and Too Thin?
There's actually two right now. Actually, one's a prequel. And during this first one, the husband is alive.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's one that comes after that takes place in Las Vegas.
Oh my goodness. And you blog about that a lot. So that's going to definitely.
I wanted to blend. That one has to do with the characters in Las Vegas to do a seminar on obsessive love and love addiction. So it kind of blends in that kind of some of the stuff we've been talking about at the same time.
Okay.
Some little clues like when is love an addiction and when is it not? And you kind of learn that through the course of the seminar while the murder case is going on behind it.
You said you wanted to be a teacher, and I think you are a teacher, Barbara, but not maybe in the way you initially saw yourself as being a teacher. Can you tell our off-the-shelf listeners how they can get a copy of Too Rich and Too Thin?
Amazon is the best.
And why did you pick that title? I know you said she was appearance obsessed. Is that why you picked that title? Because I'm like, why did she pick that title for the book?
Well, I tell you where I got it. I had struggled and struggled and struggled for a title, and I was actually leaving Las Vegas, and I was getting on a plane, nothing to read, so I picked up the thing that you have in the cities that has the movies and all sorts of things, but it also has the personal ads,
mm-hmm.
and I love to read those. So I flipped over to the personal ads, and I kind of got interested in how everybody that's looking for somebody is, you know, loves theater, walks on the beach, reads
mm-hmm.
books, is slender, and that's kind of where I got the idea. It was almost like
somebody was,
and there's a part in the book where she does put up the dead woman. I mean, it's found later.
Oh.
That was how I did it.
Oh, my goodness. That is a wonderful title. Too Rich and Too Thin, not an autobiography.
Right.
By
and that's
Barbara DeSantis.
Finding it, Amazon is the best way. You can also go through the major bookstores, but they'll charge you full price.
Okay,
you can get it for dirt cheap on Amazon.
All right, Amazon, off-the-shelf listeners, or you can read a free excerpt at mysterystring.com. You can go to amazon.com to pick up a copy to meet David and George and the wife who was obsessed with her appearance. And I can tell you, if you read just some of Barbara's blogs, you'll know that this is a great story just from the way that she writes and her sense of humor. It's a mystery with a touch of comedy in it. So it's not a heavy book. And you probably learn something maybe about yourself
before you put the book down. We are coming down to our last few seconds. We have been here with Barbara DeShong. She's a psychologist, wonderful blogger, and a talented book writer. She's the author, again, of Too Rich and Too Thin, her latest, The Special Educator, Stress and Survival. There will be a sequel to Too Rich and Too Thin. So we're looking forward to that. And she is online at mysteryshrink.com. Barbara, we thank you so much for being here with us. We thank all of our listeners. Please come back next Saturday, 11 o'clock, where we'll continue to bring you wonderful authors, publishers, and editors, and other movers and shakers in the book publishing world. Thanks again to Barbara and to all of you, as I always tell you. Remember, you're so truly valued, so incredibly blessed. Go out and create a wonderful day for yourself. And Barbara, I'll shoot you an email. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.